And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everybody, Hands-On Apologetics. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. And I'm Gary Matuta, your host and sensei and everything else. I'm also a good friend and a struggling Christian trying to learn, explain, share the faith with confidence, clarity, and charity. And, you know, that's a lifelong project, folks. And it's a struggle, but, you know, just trying to cope. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Welcome. We have a great show in store for you, because people converting to the faith, God uses all these incredible gifts and talents that they developed outside the church to edify the church. And today we're going to talk with somebody who helps others do more, be more efficient, be better at whatever they do. They're, I guess you would call a life coach or a life hack type person who gives great advice on how to become more productive. And when such a person becomes Catholic, well, guess what? He can help us become better Catholics. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about. We're going to have Pat Flynn from The Pat Flynn Show join us after the first break. And we're going to talk about... Well, we'll talk a little bit at first that his own story, his journey of faith, but also he's going to give us the lowdown about how we can use some of these skills that he's been teaching and that he's been applying to make us better defenders of the faith, better Catholics in general, and pretty much better at everything else. I mean, what more can you ask for? So Pat Flynn's going to join us on the other side of the break. And as always, we're going to have our exercises, intellectual exercises, learn a little bit. And today's Finding the Fallacy is the Hasty Generalization. And also going to meet an early church father, St. Optatus of Milevis. Yes, not exactly a household name, but nevertheless, an important early church father indeed. And as always, you are part of the program. So if you maybe you have a question for Pat Flynn, maybe there's something that you're struggling with that you would like to become better at, he is the man to talk to. And the number to call is 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or you can always send us your emails at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And all the emails do come to the Dojo mailbox, and I do reply. And by the way, there are a few emails in the Dojo mailbox that are gathering dust. And I want to apologize if you're listening to the program. I promise I will get to them. I've just been buried with work, and you know I'm starting to see the light, so hopefully we'll be able to get through the Dojo mailbox. And maybe someday, you know, maybe in the near future, we'll do a Dojo mailbox session, and you know we can bring some of these great emails that have been sent in and we could talk about them. All right, so also I need to give my shout out to all the great people who are joining the Dojo via social media, that is via Facebook, YouTube. Hello everybody, and oh wow, very colorful emoji explosions, appreciate it. Pauline and the other gang, I did see the other ones too in the corner of my eye. Welcome aboard, everybody, and also welcome all of you listening on great Catholic radio stations across the nation and over the seas. We do know we have some people who are outside the boundaries of the United States listening in, so welcome. And why don't we jump into our exercises, shall we? Like I said, every program, we take an informal fallacy just to be aware of how to spot poor thinking. So today's fallacy is the hasty generalization fallacy. And this fallacy is in which a conclusion that is reached is not logically justified by sufficient or unbiased evidence. In other words, hasty generalization is based on a poor sample or poor quality evidence. So when one makes a hasty generalization fallacy, they're basically... Usually what happens is they apply a belief to a larger population. And, of course, that belief is based on too small of a sample size to accurately generalize it. And I was surfing the web because, you know, examples, I think, are the best way to understand fallacies. Definitions aren't very good. And hello from Wyoming. Well, hello from Wyoming. Welcome. I should say hello from the Midwest Command Center. I'm sorry, folks. Back to the finding of the fallacy. If my brother eats pizza and French fries and he's healthy, then I can say that eating pizza and French fries are healthy for everybody. Okay? That would be a hasty generalization. Or here's another one. My grandparents smoke like chimneys, and they live to be over 100. Therefore, you know, smoking is not bad for your health. Now, the thing is, as you can tell, the sample size is simply too small to make such a generalization true. And so, therefore, I committed what's called the hasty generalization. I didn't wait till all the evidence came in. I just kind of jumped the gun and made a general conclusion that happens to be false. All right, so that's our finding of the fallacy. Don't commit that fallacy, folks. Hasty generalization. Make sure that you got plenty of good, solid evidence to support your arguments. All right, let's meet an early church father. Like I said, this particular church father is not exactly a household name. In fact, I pretty much guess that everybody listening, that of the whole people listening, I am sure no one has a devotion to this particular saint. But nevertheless, it's Saint Optoptus of Milevis, who was born sometime around AD 320, died in sometime AD 385. And he really was the guy who battled against this heresy known as Donatism. So let me talk a little bit about it, then I'll explain what Donatism is. Donatism was the logical heirs of the Anabaptist sacramental practice of St. Cyprian of Carthage. If you remember, St. Cyprian of Carthage didn't believe that the baptism of heretics was a valid baptism. And that kind of grew into a heresy known as the Donatists, and they eventually formed a schism. They broke from the church. The schism began in 312 AD, and its immediate antecedents actually goes back to 303. And the schism lasted just about 100 years, and it confined himself mainly to Africa. And this happened when Cecilian was consecrated bishop of Carthage in the year 311 or 312. And a rich widow, Lucia, had a personal animus against this particular bishop, and she succeeded in her designs to get a considerable part of the Carthaginian clergy to refuse to recognize the validity of the consecration of Cecilian. And they did so on the grounds of his unworthiness to be consecrated as bishop. And in particular, they accused him of surrendering the books of scripture during the Diocletian persecution. A charge, by the way, that was false. And instead, the group of Donatists who rejected this bishop on those grounds elected for themselves another bishop named Majorianus. And he was consecrated by a fellow named Donatist, who was later known by the heretics as Donatus the Great, who is the founder of the schism. Okay, so what exactly is the Donatist schism? Well, basically they argued that Christian clergy had to be faultless in order to administer the sacraments in an effective and valid way. So, of course, in this case, they accused him of surrendering books, basically for apostatizing from the faith. And so they claimed since he had such a great sin, he could not confer the sacraments. And he also couldn't receive the sacrament of ordination. So this idea that the validity and the efficacy of sacraments is based on the minister's orthodoxy or state of grace is actually part of this Donatist heresy. And by the way, the Catholic Church teaches, and this is, you can find this in Ludwig Ott's Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma. Great book, by the way, for those who are defenders of the faith or you just love theology, pick it up. Ludwig Ott's Fundamentals of Faith. Ott points out that the validity and the efficacy of sacraments is independent of a minister's orthodoxy or state of grace. So in as far as the state of grace is concerned, this doctrine is de fide. This means it's official, you know, the doctrine of the church you can't dissent from. And as far as orthodoxy is concerned, it is de fide in respect to baptism. And there is also a sentia fide proxima, which means this is a sense among theologians, a consensus among theologians that it's also true in regards to the other sacraments as well. So the era of Donatists who demanded not mere orthodoxy, but to be free from all grievous sin for the validity of the administration of the sacraments was rejected by our early church father today, St. Optatus, and especially by St. Augustine, on the grounds that the primary minister of the sacraments, folks, is not the priest, but Christ. Okay? So that is the schism. Now, in the latter days of the schism, both parties call forth their best advocates. The Donatists had their writer, who is Parmenion, and the Orthodox Catholic side had Optatus as their champion. Now, little is known about Optatus, except for the writing against Parmenion. He was Bishop of Melevis in the Nubian Africa, and he was presumed to be born about 320 and died around 385 AD. And his work is The Schism of the Donatists. So check it out, folks. Very important early church father, although pretty obscure. Coming up next on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking with life coach Pat Flynn. Stay tuned.
Welcome to our January 11th, 2020 Spiritual Warfare Conference. Every year without fail, this is our most popular, well-attended event. This year's Spiritual Warfare Conference will host Adam Bly, a Catholic demonologist and an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists, along with Dr. Luis Sandoval, a psychiatrist who's part of the Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism team for the Diocese of Orange. These two gentlemen bring tons of experience and expertise in the area of spiritual warfare. This is going to be a high-information Catholic seminar. I'll be there as well, sharing some riveting stories on the diabolical and liberation found through Jesus Christ from my best-selling book, The Devil in the City of Angels. Mark your calendars, come and join us, and meet other radio hosts from Jesus 911. Contrary to popular belief, spiritual warfare is not demon-centered. It's Christ-centered. Come join us and learn how to armor up and fight the good fight of faith. Catholics, wake up. Don't hit the snooze button. Join us at St. Christopher Catholic Church, 629 South Glendora Avenue, Escovina, California, on January 11, 2020. See you then. Strength and honor in Jesus' name.
Hebrews 11:3 says, "By faith we come to understand." According to St. Augustine, understanding is the reward of faith. Therefore, seek not to understand that you may believe, but believe that you may understand. May God grant us a strong living faith in Him and His divine plan of salvation, and help us to believe so that we may understand.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody, and we're going to meet our guest, who is Pat Flynn of the Pat Flynn Show. Pat Flynn's show covers everything from fitness to mental health to business to writing to philosophy to theology. He's a best-selling author, philosopher, fitness coach, musician, and entrepreneur who expounds upon the theory of generalism, a theory applicable to each and every one of us. And by the way, his website, if you want to check it out, and I really encourage you that you do, is Chronicles of Strength, all one word, .com. And Pat Flynn, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Gary, a pleasure to be with you as always.
Yeah, you know, I was struggling to come up with a title for what you do. Is there a title for what you do?
You know, it's so awkward when people ask me what I actually do for a living. Sometimes it's easier just to say you sell drugs or something, but then I realize that doesn't go whole, you know, very well with being Catholic and all that. In a simple sense, I write. That's what I do. I primarily write, but there's a whole bunch of other roles that I fill. And in another sense, I'm an online marketer. I'm a content generator. I do a lot of various online promotions in the fitness industry. I offer fitness online fitness services. I have my books. So it's really a ridiculous hodgepodge of things that I struggle probably even more than you do, honestly. And it's as much as I love talking, when people ask what I do for a living, I always get kind of a little squirmish, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I kind of have the same problem, but not as bad as you, though. You know, for me, it's like, what do you do? Well, I'm an apologist. A what? Okay, now I got to explain what apologetics is. And then it's like, I defend the Catholic faith.
Word.
The what?
Mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, at least you have one clear idea of what it is that you do. I need to work on that. Thanks for giving me the challenge.
Hey, there we go. Well, you know, it's funny. It's like I hate it when people ask me because it's like I don't have enough time to go through all. I'm an author. Okay, what do you write? Apologetics. What's you know? It's almost like a comedy routine. But anyhow, it's been a while since you've been on the show. So back to you, the guest. Maybe you can share a little bit about your journey of faith, because that, I think, really fits in with the topic that we're going to talk about, basically how to become better at things.
Sure, with pleasure. And actually, my latest book called How to Be Better at Almost Everything is an interesting starting point, because that's the book where I try to present this idea of generalism. And the broad idea is that life is certainly more interesting, but can also be a lot more productive when you focus on getting good to great, or at least fairly competent at a wide variety of things, rather than trying to hyper-specialize or be the best in the world at any one. And the immediate tie-in with faith in terms of my life is I actually converted while I was writing that book, like smack dab in the middle of my second manuscript was when I formally entered the Catholic Church. So at the time of kind of building out my ideas behind this book, which was really reflecting back on all the things I had done in my professional and personal life and all the things I had been interested in and the types of things that I thought could help younger people, and especially younger people who had an entrepreneurial inclination. I was wrestling with becoming Catholic, and eventually I submitted to it. And so there's many, even though it's not a religious book, if you look at the first couple chapters, you realize I talk a lot about the idea of freedom, but from a Catholic perspective, the idea of freedom for excellence, the freedom to do what you ought to do, that like, hey, truth exists and you can be a good person. And what I've found, Gary, interestingly enough, is that, you know, so many business books, they talk about living the good life or finding happiness, but they never have a lot of clarity of what that means. It's often like obscenely relativistic, or they just equate it to making money. Yeah. And one of the things that really drew me to, and we talked about this last time, to the Catholic intellectual tradition was traditional natural law and how they were able to so fully articulate what exactly the good life meant. And what the purpose of human life is, which we believe is eternal friendship with God. Now, I don't go that far down the theological rabbit hole of the book, but I give a broad outline and a broad argument that, hey, like some ways of living are objectively better than others. And, you know, we can acquire virtue. We can like shift the disposition of our soul to a higher pitch. And that's going to take some work. And when we become more skilled at things, and this was one of the Catholic ideas that I was wrestling with and thought had excellent integration to the theme of my book, is that when you become skilled at something, you actually gain more freedom, because you can express yourself at a higher pitch. For example, when I discipline my desires to sit down and really practice the guitar, okay, I'm restricting my freedom in one sense. I'm not doing whatever I want. I'm practicing according to a certain method. But in another sense, I'm gaining a totally new and even more expansive form of freedom, which is the ability to express myself on the fretboard. And of course, there's a direct moral tie-in and tie-in to the life of faith there. But I don't know if that answers your question, but that is the kind of journey of how my faith coincided with this idea of generalism. Literally came into the Catholic Church as I was writing this book.
Yeah, that's fantastic, because I think you're absolutely right that what's the end point or goal of, you know, I back when I was, you know, toying around with being an entrepreneur back, you know, several decades ago, all the business books, all the help books, it was just basically, you know, an end in itself. This is how you make money. This is how you invest money. But for what reason? You know, and like you said, it's almost like there are lots of goods, but there are some goods that are definitely better than others, and some that goods that give you more freedom by giving up lesser things. You know, you actually can express yourself. You could do more by focusing on those.
And the funny thing about this, Gary, is that when this is probably the portion of my book that has received the most positive feedback. I just was reading two emails this morning of people talking about how profound this insight seemed. I'm like, well, that's really interesting, because like this is just what the Catholic Church has taught all along. And the amazing thing, because I'm not really in the religious space for most of my publications, most of my followers and readers are probably secular, is that you can present Catholic ideas, but so long as you don't present them as being Catholic, people love them. They can't get enough of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
and then when you say, oh, by the way, there's a name for this. It's called the Catholic Church. Then, like, you know, it raises all the hairs on the back of their neck. But it is kind of like, I kind of call it a kind of underhanded apologetic. If you just lead with the beauty or goodness of the Catholic faith, but just hold off on a minute as presenting it as the full religion, it's amazing how far you can move people along.
Yeah, you know, and there actually is a religious sister to that, because sometimes when Protestants start picking up on certain Catholic truths, they will become the like crypto Catholics in their own church, and they'll go to Bible studies and they'll pull out all these Catholic insights in Scripture, and people love it but they don't know it's Catholic. That's why they love it. They see the intrinsic truth of it. So that's true even in religious circles as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a useful practical tip for people, especially when you're kind of assessing your audience. I think there's just like, we're not trying to pull a bait and switch. Don't get me wrong. You're not trying to dupe people, but there's practical ways that you can lead into religious conversation where you can start with certain points that you know are going to be inherently attractive, which I would say the Catholic Church is by itself when it's properly understood. But the problem is people hold so many misconceptions. I mean, I did for so long. I just did not understand what the Catholic Church was. So you can start to kind of scoot around some of these misconceptions just by talking about things like how the Catholic Church views the good life, or the cardinal or theological virtues, which have just an inherent ring of truth and beauty to them that I've found people are overwhelmingly responsive to those types of conversation.
Yeah, they're true and they're incredibly practical, too. Because they bear good fruit when you do it, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the beginning of my book really just kind of makes an argument for traditional natural law without explicitly stating it. And people were all for it. They're like, this is great. And it's funny when you look at the other business books, is I think people have gotten tired of like money being a sort of an end to itself. They realize, yeah, this can't be right. This is obviously not the secret to fulfillment here. That you start to see like a lot of other like pseudo religious titles come up, specifically like Stoicism. Have you noticed that? Like, there's been this huge resurgence of Stoicism in the kind of like the popular press lately, and that just tells me people just have this the soul's upward yearning just will not go away. They just have this spiritual itch that they're trying to scratch, but at the same time, so many people are so just averse to the notion of religion that Seneca, let's give him a shot, or Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that, yeah, good stuff. It's that's what always struck me too, is like, you get an investment book, how to invest money and make money, and then what do you do with the money you make? Well, I guess you just keep investing it, you know. It's like, where's the end to this? Now So let's talk a little bit about your show, and then on the other side of the break, we'll jump into generalism and, you know, becoming good at everything.
Cool.
Which is a pretty low goal for, you know, for us.
I always hedge it by saying, or at least fairly competent.
Hey, there you go. There you go. But on your show, like if someone was going to tune in, and by the way, folks, the website is chroniclesofstrength.com. It's not all religion, is it? It's but you're starting to incorporate a little bit in there.
Yeah, so I started the podcast, interestingly enough, as a way to build out a lot of the ideas that eventually came to be found in the book that we're talking about. And that was it. It was just a pure means of trying to because when you talk things through, it's sometimes easier to come to new insights, I found. And that was the only reason I started the podcast. And then it really just became something that I fell in love with, that a lot of people told me they were getting a lot of value of. So then it actually became like this prominent part of my business and took on a life of its own. And then most of the topics I talk about on there are, you know, kind of in the space that I have spent most of my time in, which is fitness and entrepreneurship. But after, you know, I converted to the Catholic faith, I felt, you know, here's an opportunity to present the richness of Catholicism to people who aren't Catholic, you know, and maybe they're not hostile, maybe they're falling away, or maybe they've just never been exposed to the Catholic faith. So I decided to start a segment there's actually two segments, but the more relevant one would be the segment called Sunday School. And that's where I have all kinds of guests on, people like yourself, to come and offer an explanation or a defense of the Catholic religion. And I try to do so in a way that is as inviting as possible, knowing that my audience is coming from an enormous variety of backgrounds. You know, I have atheists, I have agnostics, I have spiritual but not religious, I have Protestants, and I do have some Catholics as well. So I try to make sure that the conversation is precise, because I want to give the best impression that I can, but also inviting and not, you know, not trying to shove things down people's throats. I think that generally is not the most effective way to get the job done. And then I have Philosophy Friday, which is where I explore various philosophical topics, which is Aquinas said, you know, philosophy is the handmaid to theology. So, you know, in a way, these two segments really help to support one another. And I've recently just been doing a couple episodes on natural theology, going through Aquinas's five ways, things like that. So that's a general overview of what I'm doing.
Yeah, so that's great, because that's a huge slice of life, isn't it? I mean, fitness, you got entrepreneurship, you got philosophy, and then you dive into theology as well. So, yeah, and non-threatening as well, you know, because it's like they don't have to listen to the Sunday School if they don't want to, but it's there.
That's right. It's a buffet. Take what you want, leave what you don't. But I've realized a lot of people are taking that Sunday hard portion of the buffet, which is really interesting.
That's awesome. We're chatting with Pat Flynn of The Pat Flynn Show. Stay tuned, folks. More to come on the other side of the break.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle and he says to me, "Hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Jesse's show and it's great." And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Eddie Chavez, host of Jesus 911. I want to take this opportunity to let you, our listeners, know about an event being held here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. We will be celebrating the Feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 28th, 2019, beginning at 9 o'clock with Mass in the morning and talks to follow. Ruben Nava and myself will be speaking. So come and hear us talk about St. Michael and Our Lady. Come join us. We'll see you there.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We're chatting with Pat Flynn of The Pat Flynn Show. And as you know, on this program, I call it the dojo because it's a kind of workout session. We learn how to explain, defend the faith, share the faith, and become better and better at it. And this episode, I think, is going to be one of the most important episodes for all you dojoites out there. I don't know what you would call people who attend a dojo, but anyway, because Pat Flynn is a way in which we can maximize our abilities, not only in apologetics, but pretty much everything. And so, Pat, yeah, you know, I was reading your introduction. I kind of grinned because it says the theory of generalism, a theory applicable to each and every one of us. And I thought, it'd be interesting to try to come up with another theory of generalism that only applies to like three or four people. Wouldn't that be a fun endeavor?
Well, I think the opposite of that would be hyper specialization, which is kind of what I'm arguing against. And just to give a little background of this idea, and I think it ties deeply into apologetics, even though I didn't really recognize how that would be the case until after I wrote the book. It goes back to kind of my history as a musician. And I remember as I was pretty young and I was taking guitar lessons from my instructor, and he confronted me one lesson. And he said, "Look, Pat, you're really interested in playing very technically. You want to be a pyrotechnic, like thrash guitarist. I get it. But if you want to like make connections in the music industry, like if you want to get gigs, if you want to find jobs, and if you want to work your way up, then you have to become more versatile." He said, because look, like the role you're trying to fill right now, first off, like expired in the late 80s. So let that be said. but you know, and I kind of had the idea that I'd be like a touring or studio musician at the time. He's like, look, people are going to need a guitarist that can fill multiple roles, you know, be able to play some jazz, be able to play some country, be able to play some alternative rock. You don't have to be the best at any one of these things, and you can still have your specialist leanings, but you need to become more of a generalist. Now, at the time, I didn't take any of the advice to heart. I said, that's fine. I'm just going to keep doing, you know, whatever I want. And I paid the price for that, because the truth is what I was interested in as a guitarist did not match up to what most people were looking for in a musician. I just wanted to be really fast, really technical. I had my guitar heroes, you know, from the 80s that nobody really cared about anymore. And that was really limiting to me. But then when I went to college, and I was it's kind of funny because I originally went to college for music, but then switched out of that to economics and then later philosophy. I started personal training people as a way to pay the bills. And I got into that actually through martial arts. So my background is Taekwondo. We call it a dojang, not a dojo. Just had to tie it in somehow. Yeah. And I started a blog, the blog that I have now, Chronicles of Strength. And along with music, I always had a deep love for writing. And my blog began to attract attention in college. And the reason it attracted attention wasn't because I was the biggest, wasn't because I was the strongest. You know, I got in good shape. I could do a number of cool things. But I also, you know, I could write. I could explain things well. I also knew a good amount about marketing. So it was actually through this ability that I had to stack various skills that allowed me to stand out in an otherwise very noisy industry. And that's when I could connect it back to what my guitar instructor was trying to teach me. It wasn't that I was the best at any one particular thing. I definitely wasn't. Never been a professional bodybuilder or powerlifter, especially not in fitness. I just have broad general ability. But I was good at other things that I could combine with that: communication skills, marketing skills. And it was the combination of the skills, the skill stacking, as I call it in the book, that actually gave me advantages over the hyper specialist. over the professional powerlifters who were struggling to, you know, find any type of attention online, or the professional bodybuilders. So by going as broad as I was going deep, at least, I think I was able to create something valuable and unique. So that's the general idea that I present in the book. And then we can explore that in an apologetics context as we go.
Yeah. So actually, the more generalized your skill sets were, the more unique you became.
Yeah, that's at least that's what I found. It was almost like totally by accident. It was just that, like, I was just never going to be the biggest or strongest. I mean, I'm like a genetically just skinny and Irish. So the deck was pretty stacked against me to begin with. So if nothing else, it was out of necessity. But it worked out. And it wasn't intentional. And that's kind of the idea for the book, is it was looking back and trying to analyze, well, why did this work out? And I kept coming to this idea of not being the best at any one thing, but being good to great, or at least fairly competent across a broad range of different skills that really allowed me to kind of find my way in the entrepreneurial space.
Yeah. So how would we determine what are our skills? I think that would be the hard part.
Well, yeah. So in my book, I outline a kind of hierarchy of skills. And at the bottom level, I call them meta skills. And now you're going to have to make me think back to what I actually wrote in this book. It's been a while.
Just wait. Go ahead, wait.
Isn't that always the case, right? You get one book done, okay, on to the next thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it all just like falls out of your ear. But the meta skills in my book are the foundational skills. I say, hey, look, as a human being, and no matter what you want to do, like if you invest in these skills, it's going to help everything. Apologetics, writing, being a musician, being a scientist, like whatever it is, if you get better at these skills, like even just marginally, everything's going to improve. And in that category, I include things like logic, for example, which is a hugely neglected area of study these days. Like why people aren't taught logic at a very early age is beyond me. But if you can learn to think in clear, consistent, and straight channels, I mean, you're going to be able to sift through a lot of nonsense. You're going to be able to, and logic is really just a branch of philosophy that just makes explicit the rules of good reasoning. Who couldn't benefit from that? Right. So that's kind of one of those foundational skills. And that's certainly something that my background in philosophy, it helped my writing. Because if you can think straight, then you can write straight. And people like to read writing that makes sense. So there's a sort of a harmony there as well. And then communication and writing is another one of those skills. Again, no matter what you're doing, having some basic communication skills, understanding the nuts and bolts of writing, is you don't have to be like an amazing pro stylist, but just, you know, being able to clean things up and present ideas clearly is a really helpful skill. Or here's another one. Persuasion. Like, let's read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now, I think we can think of a direct tie into apologetics there. Principles of persuasion. I mean, going all the way back to Aristotle's rhetoric of, you know, leading with relationships, understanding that you attract more with honey than vinegar, and that persuasion isn't about being like a used car salesman in an oversized suit. It's really about as much about listening as it is about talking. It's much about playing the long game of building relationships, getting people to know you, like you, and trust you. And then that will open them up to hearing your ideas, whether they are religious ideas or business ideas or just perspectives on anything. It can never hurt to start with with building a bridge of forming a relationship with somebody. So those would be just three examples of a kind of like the broad meta skills that I think would benefit almost everybody.
Yeah, and they kind of have a multiplying effect. You know, if you're really solid at logical, rational thought, that's like leaven that, you know, everything, it'll affect everything in your life. You'll be better at. You'll be better at paying bills, you know, and budgeting or playing guitar or, you know, learning music or something like that. You're right. It kind of like is yeast that rises, you know, makes the dough bigger.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. It's a force multiplier in a way, and that like just even a little bit can take you really, really far. And, you know, logic is kind of like your shockproof BS detector in life. You'll be able then to engage with arguments. And they might be arguments coming from a specific domain and here's an apologetics context, like a specific scientist in a specific specialization might give an argument that, you know, seems a little odd. But if you have training in logic, You know, you can assess arguments even without being a hyper specialist, because you can kind of pull out what the premises are, and then you can analyze the argument and say, okay, does the conclusion follow? And you might find, actually, even if his premises are true, this conclusion doesn't follow at all, so I don't need to take his argument seriously. Or you might find, actually, the logic here is valid, so now I need to evaluate the premises, which means now I either have to start to train myself in this area, or I need to seek the help of another specialist to understand it. So it can just help you to kind of parse your way through various claims and arguments that you might find in the context of apologetics or elsewhere.
Yeah. So in regards to communication skills, does that involve like media, like discerning whether you're good at writing or good at editing video or audio? Or is it just in general, just being able to form a lucid communication in general?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the great Catholic both and on this one.
Okay.
And
it's great being Catholic, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, we can always go between the horns in most cases, including the Euthyphro dilemma. But with high five to anyone who gets that one on. But back to the original point is, so in the book I talk about everybody has their natural strengths and weaknesses. And I have a lot of people, writing into me saying, hey, I'm not great at writing. I don't like writing, but I don't mind, putting up YouTube videos or being on camera or doing a podcast. I say, hey, great. Like, definitely. Like, you definitely want to play up your strengths and you want to use your strengths. But even if you're not naturally inclined at something, like even if you aren't great at writing, like even just marginal improvements can go a long way, because chances are you're going to have to do some writing in some aspect of life where, a well-written email, even something as small as that, could make all the difference in you either getting a job or making an important connection or something like that, right? I think in a very broad sense, you want to both go with your strengths, but get your weaknesses up to at least a certain level of competence that you're going to – and that's what I think a lot of people miss out. It's like most people just don't do that. Most people just don't. Most people can't think. Most people can't write. And I don't mean to be like polemic about it, but most people don't study grammar. Most people don't study logic. So, yeah. They go largely off of intuition. And luckily we are, logic is an intuitional thing that we all have. But we want to refine that intuition. We want to get sharper. We want to become more precise. Same thing, communication is also intuitive. I would argue that music to an extent is intuitive, but we still want to study music theory so we can get better at it. And, most people just aren't doing those things. So even if you just do it just a little bit, like 10% more than you've done in the past, that could give you a significant advantage over most people most of the time. So you don't have to invest an enormous amount of energy or time into these areas to see a significant return.
Yeah, very good. Wow. Great advice and more to come. We're chatting with Pat Flynn at the Pat Flynn Show. You can check out his great stuff at chroniclesofstrengthalloneword.com. And we got more on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics. I'm Gary Machuda. We'll be right back.
We got Ernesto from Long Beach.
I just wanted to comment, and I just wanted to thank you guys. And I kind of wanted to encourage people that are listening, maybe that are not donating, because honestly, I gotta be honest, I used to think you guys were a little
too over the top,
Yeah.
That's right.
If God gave us a lot, and I have the blessing of listening to all this, and I just want to call all the people, I got 5 kids, and I don't make a lot of money, and I'm still donating to you guys.
God bless you, brother. You're amazing.
We have to do this. We have to do the extra. And it's not even the extra. People see it like it's extra. Kneeling for communion, saying your rosary, saying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. It is not extra. It's what the church tells us to do.
Amen. You're a good man, brother.
30 years old, 29 years old, 5 kids, and I thank you guys. Everybody else, man, get on fire. Fight for the truth, man. I know what I'm telling you guys. There's
I
so
love it.
Out there.
Jesus said in Matthew 26, "Stay awake and pray that you may not enter into temptation." According to St. Ephrem, Jesus, who feared nothing, experienced fear and asked to be freed from death, although he knew it was impossible. How much more must we persevere in prayer before temptation assails us, so that we may be freed when the test has come? May God grant that we may withstand temptation and carry out His will in all things.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're chatting with Pat Flynn, and he's showing us how to use generalism to become a better defender of the faith and actually better at pretty much everything. And Pat, you know, before we move on from the meta skills, I think one big obstacle that people run into is, if I can't do it perfectly, it's just so frustrating that I quit, you know? And for me, that's not a problem, because I just, like, for my, we were talking about manuscripts of books, you know, it takes 8 or 9 manuscripts before I actually have something decent. So I'm not afraid of throwing things on a page just to get it going. But I know a lot of people, it's hard to take that first step, because it's like, I can't do it the right way, the perfect way.
Yeah, you have to stumble your way to the success. And I think you bring up the example of writing. I think that's one of the best ways to learn this is every writer will tell you have to learn to make a mess, and you have to learn to love the mess, because it's a messy process. Any skill development is a messy process. And think about this. Most people are familiar with this. Like, there's nothing that you learned in life where you didn't make an enormous mess at first, whether that's learning a bike, learning. I have 3 kids. Number 4 is we should be here around this time next month. It's hilarious listening to them learn to speak the English language. I mean, the funny mistakes they make. They say all truth is a gradual removal of error. Well, I would say all learning is too, in many respects. So you're never going to learn anything unless you are willing to put aside the idea of perfectionism, because that's never going to happen. And this is something I remind people in fitness too. I tell all my clients, look, we're not focused on perfect. We're just focused on progress. And to a certain degree, you know, perfect is the enemy of progress. So don't let perfect be the enemy of good, or even great be the enemy of good. Just get started. Realize that, you know, you'll be able to tidy things up as you go along. And then once you're 1, 2, 3 years into it, you know, the process will be a lot smoother, and you'll look back at those kind of messy years. And I think you'll remember them with fondness. Sometimes a little bit of embarrassment. I look back at some of my old stuff and I'm like, oh man, how could any human ever write that badly? But you know, that was part of the process. So it doesn't have to be a holdup, and everybody goes through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. So, you know, we're discerning how to stack our skills, you know, to maximize the whole bundle of things that we're good at. And we talked about meta skills. Where do we move from there?
Well, I would like to tie this into apologetics specifically, because I think there is a really important tie in here. And when we think about most of the conversations we have in life with people about the Catholic faith, what we'll realize is they often, most of the time, that they're probably not topics that require an enormous depth of knowledge. But generally, we all have friends or family members or acquaintances or coworkers who have various objections across a broad range of the theological or philosophical spectrum. So I would argue that for most people, most of the time, you will be a more effective apologist if you're a generalist, if you have a sort of a broad command of the arguments for the truth of the Catholic faith. And we can really split that up into roughly 3 categories, as I know many of your listeners are probably familiar with, right? We have natural theology, or arguments for the existence of God. That's like step one. And that's where we need to be able to address people who are either atheistic or agnostic, right? Then we have kind of category 2, which is now we need to make the case for Christ specifically, the resurrection, Christ's claims to divinity, etc. That's to get us to a sort of a mere Christianity. That gets us into the hallway of Christianity. And who is that addressing? Well, that's addressing really, I think, a lot of the younger generation, because most people really aren't atheists. Most people really do are religious, or at least believe in God. The statistical majority do. But they're spiritual but not religious, for example. And that's where being able to articulate the case for Jesus is going to be really helpful. And then, of course, we have that final pillar, which is providing a reasonable foundation for the truth of the Catholic faith, that God founded the Catholic Church. And that's where we will be dialoguing with other Christians, specifically Protestants. And like I said, I think when we reflect on our experience, we'll realize that, most of the conversations I have really are very broad. I'm probably not publishing in a very technical journal where I need to have an enormous amount of depth on, say, subjects like divine simplicity. But I think I probably would be better suited if I just had, you know, a class of general arguments for the existence of God. I understood the common objections to God's existence, a class of general arguments for the divinity of Christ, and a class of general arguments for the truth of the Catholic Church. So in that sense, I think being a generalist is more valuable for most people most of the time than just like hyper specializing in any one of those particular areas.
Yeah. No, that's true, because I know in my experience, the more I learn in one of those three fields, the more I understand how all three of them integrate with one another, and I think I'm better at the other fields. Does that make sense?
It does. I agree. So everybody has their specialist leanings, and I'm certainly not against that. You know, mine would be natural theology, but you're right. Like once I would argue that once you can make a really robust demonstration for God's existence and the nature of God, that inherently raises the probability of Christ's resurrection. Like it fits like a hand in a glove at that point. So the way you would evaluate that evidence is in an entirely new light and perspective. And same thing with the Catholic, it kind of extends through the Catholic Church and vice versa, right? Like once you have the theology down or the historical evidence surrounding Christ, one could argue that itself is powerful enough to argue for God's existence. So they definitely support each other, and studying each enhances your knowledge and appreciation in the other areas as well. I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah. So stacking skills, like you said, you know, having something in all three of those areas, that's a skill stack. How do we expand on that? Do you look at, well, what other things am I good at and figure out how to integrate that? Or how do you grow the stacking?
Yeah. So I here's where I divide apologetics into another like two segments. So we have like the three categories of apologetics. And I would say we have like the two methods or branches. And one is the matter and the manner. And the matter is understanding the subject, understanding the arguments, understanding the common objections. And I think what people will find is, again, most of the time, it's typically around like 5 to 8 of the same usual tired objections for any one of those categories, right? It's like there's a funny meme going around of Richard Dawkins' new book, which is like includes such classic arguments of like, if God real, why monkey? Why bad things feel good, et cetera. And it's funny because it's kind of true, right? Like these are the same tired old objections. So like if you just have good responses to these silly arguments, you'll be able to diffuse the majority of the conversations you have with most atheists most of the time. But then there's the manner. And that's how do you present these arguments, and how do you assess when to present these arguments? And this takes not just persuasion skills, but, you know, common sense. And there's different types of interlocutors. I mean, you're going to have people that are exceedingly hostile, and arguments are just going to bounce off their heads like ping pong balls, because they're just not going to want to hear it for whatever reason. It might be emotional reasons or historical things that happened in their past. Maybe they got burned by a religious person. It doesn't matter. Arguments actually aren't going to be very effective. Okay, well, what should you do? Well, maybe you try to be friends with that person. Maybe you try to form a relationship. Maybe you try to talk about sports or something else, right? And here's where being a generalist can help. Maybe like you both have an interest in music. And this was, you know, one of my friends is in the RCIA right now, and we became friends fairly recently because of our shared love for music. And that invited religious conversation. And at that point, you know, we had such a great relationship that he was actually open to hearing the ideas of the Catholic faith. So I think that's an often enormously underlooked aspect of apologetics is the manner and trying to assess where is somebody at. Now, arguments are good for a certain class of person. One class of person would be somebody who's interested in the faith and they kind of want it to be true, but they actually have sincere intellectual doubts. You know, maybe they just got out of college and they heard all the stock objections to theism or Christianity from their liberal professor, and they don't know that there's any good responses. So they're kind of waning in their faith. That is where you could step in and provide a robust apologetic and really help somebody along. But that person is in a totally different position than somebody who is, an ardent militant atheist for other reasons. So you have to be able to assess the situation as best as you can and then differentiate between both the matter and the manner. And that's where other skills, like we brought up, skills like persuasion, just common sense, the ability to form relationships with people, even around other, like if all you talk about or all you know is religion, it's going to be really difficult to find common ground with people who aren't interested in religion, right? So you're kind of frustrating your own purpose in that sense by being a hyper specialist.
Yeah, that's such a great point too, because it seems like the more you know and the more capable you're in apologetics, the less people want to talk to you. I mean, I stand outside some days looking down the hall, down the block, hoping that some Mormons or Jehovah Witnesses will come by. But when I didn't know anything, you know, it's like they're constantly knocking at my door. So it's, you're absolutely right. It's like it makes you sticky, generalism, isn't it? It's because you can relate to different people on different levels
and
different
topics. And you can be proactive. So you're not just sitting at a party like stirring your mixed drink, waiting for somebody to bring up, you know, the doctrine of the Trinity, which is probably not going to happen. Right. Instead, you can enter conversations where they are, form relationships, and then you can steer them over time. So it's a completely more effective and it's really a very common sense approach. But once you get hyper specialized, it's easy to lose sight of that. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I've been there. I get it.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, the beautiful thing is like, your love for music is ultimately tied with your love for God in one way or another. And so, with generalism, I think, you know, if you're sticky in one area, like somebody likes music, you like music, invariably and very naturally, someday or another, you know, God's going to come into the picture because, you know, that's just part of you. It's just one component of many things that you're good at and you love.
Yeah. And I think another part of it is kind of like, thinking about conversation starters. So I think back to this friend, you know, we started jamming, started making music. He would just come to my house and he would just see how religious it was, right? He would see my enormous library of books. He would see our religious, we have statues of Mary, you know, we have religious pictures all over the house. And that naturally invites curiosity and conversation. And he wasn't somebody that was, super against religion. He just had never really had a good representation of it. So he was kind of in that category of person that once I had formed that relationship, he was very receptive to hearing the case because we were already friends. And sometimes just bringing somebody into another environment without even being pushy about the conversations can be a great way. It's always best if they can start the conversation, for sure.
Yeah, very good. Where can people get a hold of your book?
Amazon.com is the easiest place. How to be better at almost everything. It's a little green.
All right. Thank you so much, Pat. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Always a pleasure, Gary. Thank you.
All right. Pat Flynn, everybody. And boy, this is the fastest hour on Catholic Talk Radio, I swear. Coming up next, High Impact Catholic Talk, coming at you with the Terry and Jesse Show. Excuse me. It's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center, turn off the dojo lights. Really appreciate you listening to the program. By the way, coming up tomorrow, Jeff Kassab's coming out. We're going to be talking about the Eucharist. So lots of great stuff coming up. Hope everybody has a great day. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.